This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's been 4 years since COVID-19 arrived in West Virginia. Healthcare leaders from across the state reminisce on what the pandemic taught them.
I remember sitting at Kanawha Charleston Health Department with 10 swabs, knowing that there were more people exposed in one patient than I could possibly test at that time.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The public has a week left to comment on the controversial segment of Quarter H. Curtis Tate has more.
The Federal Highway Administration is accepting comment on the Parsons to Davis portion of the long-planned highway until March 27th. The agency intends to prepare a supplemental environmental impact statement on the 9-mile section of the corridor. The West Virginia Division of Highways prefers a southern route, while some residents and community groups favor a northern route they say would have less environmental impact. To comment on the project, visit our website, wvpublic.org. Most of the 130-mile road is complete. About 7 miles of the road from Wardensville to the Virginia state line are under construction. The corridor is one of the biggest economic development priorities for the state's elected leaders. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
The Public Service Commission launched a task force to address antiquated and defective fire hydrants, like the three that failed to deliver water while a Charleston house was burning down. Brianna Heaney has more.
The West Virginia legislature passed a bill creating a task force that brings stakeholders and experts to the table. It makes fire hydrants the responsibility of water utilities. Charlotte Lane, chair of the Public Service Commission, said the task force will help ensure West Virginians have fire hydrants they can depend on.
The Public Service Commission can promulgate rules and can work with the water utilities to make sure that they do the adequate testing of these fire hydrants, to make sure that they work. I mean, it's really important that fire hydrants work for the safety of West Virginians.
This could come with a cost to consumers. If new regulations or testing result in the utilities investing in fire hydrants, then utilities may have to raise rates. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
Distilling a piece of Appalachian heritage bubbled up debate in the West Virginia legislature during the 2024 regular session. Randy Yowie reports on the spirited exchange of views prompted by the Moonshine Bill.
Picking up a pint of rum at a liquor store on Charleston's West End, Whitney Mitchell favors the idea of distilling her own booze.
I think that's pretty cool, actually, because, I mean, technically a lot of people make it illegally anyways, so it would make it better for the people.
Is there debate on the bill? Gentleman from the 51st Circuit Fast recognized.
Dubbed at first the Moonshine Bill, the initial House of Delegates proposal would allow a West Virginian at least 21 years old to make up to 25 gallons of moonshine per year. For a couple, the bill allowed 50 gallons a year, all for personal use only. The bill sponsor, Delegate Doug Smith, a Republican from Mercer County, said home distilling of spirits would enhance economic development and embrace Appalachian history and heritage.
It also is a craft. Ultimately, though, I'm not a bourbon drinker. I want to make rum, you know, something like that, you know, and try it out as a hobby. We could bring in people that do this across the state and have a contest. Of course, they can't sell it or offer it for taste or anything. There's an opportunity there bringing people in from other states to come there for the fair.
Smith's moonshine bill was met with opposition by two fellow Republicans. Delegate Tom Fast, a Republican from Fayette County, said alcohol is West Virginia's most addictive drug, causing physical and mental impairment. And a bill allowing home distilling specifically for family use could create family dangers.
But this green light to produce this controlled substance in your home says nothing about how many children are going to be or are in the home, and does that make a difference? It doesn't make a difference whatsoever.
It wasn't the quality of the moonshine, but the quantity allowed to distill that got Putnam County Republican Delegate Jeff Foster's attention.
A little bit of math, 50 gallons of alcohol equals 267 times. And why did I say 267? That's the amount of times you can get drunk off of 200, and the average person gets drunk off of 50 gallons of alcohol.
When asked in a media briefing, Governor Jim Justice leaned toward a moonshine bill rejection.
50 gallons of moonshine. It seems to me like a lot of moonshine and a lot of people that may be having a hard time finding their way home. But I'm always proud, you know, of our heritage. I'm not proud of illegal heritage.
The Moonshine Bill passed the House by one vote, 49-48, and went for consideration in the state Senate. That's where the minority leader, Senator Mike Wolfel, a Democrat from Cabell County, had concerns of the state reverting to the Prohibition era of the 1930s.
Now, I'm Irish German by ancestry, so I've got a predisposition to drink alcohol. But I'm quite sure I can drink or consume personally 50 gallons of moonshine in a year.
The bill languished in a Senate committee for weeks until the last day and the final hours of the legislative session, where it would likely die. But the moonshine proposal was resurrected with an amendment reducing the amounts allowed from 25 and 50 gallons for singles and couples to 5 and 10 gallons per year. The title was also changed to the Distilled Spirits Bill. It was passed by the Senate 18-14. The House agreed to the amendment, and the bill became completed legislation. It is now awaiting the governor's signature or not. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Randy Yohe in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Becoming mostly sunny today, highs in the 40s and 50s. Clear tonight, lows in the 20s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, but a chance of rain in the afternoon, highs in the 50s and 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by Dutch Miller Subaru in Charleston. Dutch Miller Automotive is proud to be dedicated to multiple community service initiatives and local charities. More about our team and the Subaru Love Promise at DutchMillerSubaru.com. On March 17, 2020, West Virginia became the last state in the U.S. to test positive for COVID-19. Appalachia Health News reporter Emily Rice spoke with two state health leaders about the fourth anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic arriving in West Virginia.
Time passes differently from each person's perspective. The COVID-19 pandemic may seem like decades ago to some, and just like yesterday to others. In actuality, it has been 4 years since the world as we know it came to a grinding halt. The current secretary of the West Virginia Department of Health, Dr. Sherry Young, was working as the health officer and executive director for the Kanawha Charleston Health Department when the virus arrived in the state.
We were the 50th state to have or announce our first case. And so it seems like from that waiting point, things accelerated very quickly to having more and more cases and kind of evolving from all the response that we had to do.
Dr. Clay Marsh was eventually appointed by Governor Jim Justice as West Virginia's COVID-19 czar, the person who coordinated the federal, state, and local agencies, health officials, researchers, and other agencies aiding in the state's response to the virus. However, at the beginning of the pandemic, Marsh was making decisions for West Virginia University as its executive dean for health sciences. He said he watched news reports of how the virus was spreading around the world and made decisions based on the most up-to-date information.
Seeing that coming toward us in the U.S., we decided, you know, right before spring break, that instead of bringing the students back after spring break, we would actually close the university to classes, of course, taking care of the students that were at the university, international students, people that didn't have other places to go. But otherwise, then we took a big step and went online after that.
Marsh said West Virginia's rural demographics protected it from the virus for so long, with no large urban areas for COVID-19 to spread. spread?
We had the benefit of waiting until COVID came through the rest of the world and part of the rest of the country in the urban centers to be able to respond.
Young said the first year of the pandemic was spent making hard decisions to limit the spread of COVID-19 and casualties from it.
We knew that there was very limited testing. We were using repurposed PCR testing that we changed the calibration from what we'd use for a flu test or other types of coronaviruses, that we had to develop testing. So I remember sitting at Kanawha Charleston Health Department with 10 swabs, knowing that there were more people exposed in one patient than I could possibly test at that time.
Young said one of the defining steps in mitigating the risk was the development of testing and distribution.
One of the things that Governor Justice did that was so great for us at the local health level was making that testing available to everyone once we had that capability.
Marsh said a big milestone in the COVID pandemic was understanding how it was communicated.
So I think that going from not understanding how COVID was transmitted to understanding that COVID was really transmitted by respiratory exchange, breathing exchange, coughing exchange, sneezing exchange, and it was airborne is really, really a huge advantage.
Of course, both Young and Marsh agree the invention of the COVID-19 vaccine was a turning point in fighting the virus.
The next big evolution within the COVID pandemic, when we finally got that vaccine, that was life-altering, life-changing. I will forever remember the minute that I got to give the first dose.
Marsh said not only was the invention of the vaccine a turning point, but a revolutionary moment in medicine.
Coming up with the new vaccines, particularly the messenger RNA vaccines, were really a turning point in the pandemic and allowed us to protect the most vulnerable first, the aged. The older you are, the more likely COVID will have severe consequences.
Young agreed, remembering how exciting it was for the elderly to be allowed to visit with their loved ones again without fear or worry.
For some of the older adults, especially those 65 and older, and one of the most gratifying things, getting to stand in those clinics or even doing house calls, which we had done from the Kanawha Charleston perspective, was the gratitude and being able to being open to being back around folks.
Marsh said the world is not done with COVID-19 as it continues to mutate and with some patients still suffering from long COVID.
Today, we still are not done with COVID, particularly related to the impact of long COVID, the extended problems that people can suffer, including brain fog and a variety of other problems.
Young encouraged people to speak with their physicians about what vaccination is appropriate.
Well, fortunately, people, I think, were very well attuned at the beginning, but we don't talk about COVID a lot. I think where we need to have that conversation is just realizing that it is something that we have to live with. It's now endemic in our society. We will forever be dealing with it just like we deal with the flu, just like we deal with RSV and other diseases.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Americans 65 and older should receive an additional dose of the latest COVID-19 vaccine this spring. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Emily Rice and Chris Schultz produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.